It's a pleasure to be here today. In many ways, it's kind of interesting because if somebody would have asked, would an internet networking company be giving a keynote at COMDEX just 2 years ago, how many people in this room would have said that would have happened? Three Cisco employees in the front row. But even within our own company, we wouldn't consider this a desktop or a client server show with operating systems, etc. And how does that tie to networking? And some of the largest players at this show 2 years ago were literally ignoring the internet. And yet, if you look today and where the products of almost all the companies at this show will be over the next 3 years, the devices, be they high-tech or low-tech, will have major network connectivity. And almost all the high-productivity applications will leverage the network in a major way. In short, we are evolving to get the technologies closer and closer together. And it will change almost every aspect of our lives as we go forward. I don't think it's too large a statement to say we're almost in a revolution, if you will, as we move forward. It will change literally the way we work, live, play, and learn in a way that many people have not thought of. And I want you throughout the discussion to refer to the internet.
We've eliminated 1,000 carpenter jobs in San Jose. We'd like to work with you, but we have a real problem in San Jose, and we're appealing to you. If you understand what it's like to be laid off, you can't do that anymore.
Okay. As you can see, as you grow, you get a lot more attention in many ways. Most of them for the better as you move forward. And we want to always listen to concerns. But I also encourage people to voice the concerns at the right time, and I've always been very accessible to anyone's concerns at any point in time. But what you're seeing is the internet, and I want to define the internet not in a whole bunch of a technology terms. The internet to me is one big network. It's not the corporate intranet. It's not the extranet to tie together your suppliers with your network. It's not the big I internet. It's all one network because no sooner do we create the terminology than the lines blur. But literally, it will change every aspect of our lives. The way we work, those companies who understand how to apply this technology will get ahead of other companies and perhaps not only determine their growth but their survival. It will change the way we play and live in ways that we're just starting to dream about today and perhaps our children understand better than we do. And it will also change the way we learn. Because the people who graduate today from school will have between 6 and 10 jobs as they move forward. I want to very much thank COMDEX for allowing us to be here today and SoftBank. I also want to thank the group for allowing us to broadcast to our networks in Europe and welcome the European crowd. I'd like to really focus in on primarily how it's going to change the way we work as we move forward, but I want to draw how quickly this change is occurring, evolving almost like an industrial revolution, if you will, the past. When you think about it, the Industrial Revolution occurred, started in Great Britain, spread to Western Europe, and then to the United States. And it changed the way that we worked, lived, and played, mainly for the better. It determined which economies really took off. It also determined what were the skill sets that were needed. But very simply put, what it did is it brought together machines and people in factories. And it changed forever our life. It was a revolution that occurred over several hundred years, and literally populations moved from country to country, and companies moved from country to country based upon their ability to employ the technology in this industrial revolution. I don't think the internet revolution is any different. It's going to change all aspects of our lives. It literally will bring together the internet revolution, if you will, people and information in global virtual companies. And it will have the same effect that the Industrial Revolution did. But the internet moves in what we call dog years, or internet years. One calendar year in a dog's life is really 7 years. The same thing is true in the internet. The internet moves at a pace almost 7 times faster than normal business. Just look at how much has occurred in the last 2 years since COMDEX 2 years ago and the discussion of networking and the role that it plays as you move forward. It's also going to be an internet generation. We are all part of that. And the generation doesn't apply to one age group. Our children probably understand more about the internet than many of the people in this room in terms of how to use it and how to surf it. But when I talked to a number of our customers, they would say, John, it might surprise you who interfaces this most on the Internet. I'm talking about people who go to the consumer. And the minute they said that, I had the answer. 18 to 30-year-olds, yes, I expected that, but it's 55 and over. The people who have extra time on their hands, who have an application or two that they learn how to use the Internet for, such as looking up their stocks or communicating with their grandchildren, are starting to be empowered in this area. And the Internet generation also applies to companies. Those companies who understand how to employ this technology, pick the right applications at the right time, understand their competitive advantage, keep one step ahead of commoditization in this new market, will be those who grow and survive as you move forward. And it will also apply to countries. Just like the Industrial Revolution determined which countries had the best standard of living over a period of hundreds of years, the Internet Revolution will have the same impact. Those countries who use this technology to add productivity to their government, who use this technology in the way they teach their children how to employ it to really be more effective, not only in business, but also in the way they live and play, and those countries and companies to employ it will determine the future of their economies in many, many ways. It used to be that the U.S. and Europe was 5 years ahead of Japan, as an example. You could often tell what the economy was like in terms of the Internet by just looking at the name cards. And almost no Japanese business person that I called on had their Internet address on it. Today, it's almost socially unacceptable not to do that. The Japanese, in 4 years, have closed on the advantage that Europe and North America had on the Internet to where we're almost completely equal. They understood the impact that it would have on the future of their business, the future of the country, and the future of their children. So the Internet generation is people, companies, and countries moving at an unbelievable pace as you move forward. There are two things that are really driving this. The first is it's a fourth generation of technology, with each generation being dramatically bigger than the prior generation. For several decades, it was the mainframe, followed by the mini computer, and then literally what Comdex is founded upon as far as the desktop and client servers and the applications, if you will, PCs and LAN. And now it's the network generation. And it will have more impact probably than all the three prior generations combined. So as you move into a new generation technology, you naturally see the explosion. But what is driving it even stronger than the technology is the business application. It doesn't matter if you're in Germany, France, UK, US, Japan, or China. All the business organizations have the same challenges. They understand that particularly their large companies organized improperly. You're seeing the spans of control increase dramatically, the removal of layers within the organization, and the empowerment of the workforce. But empowerment only works if you have access to the information and you know what you're supposed to be able to do. And literally the companies who learn how to do this are going to be the ones to move ahead. The average productivity or profitability return that we get at Cisco, as an example, is over a 10% per year increase in profitability or productivity within the company because of how we use internet working applications. And our average productivity is over 50% increase for the internet applications that we do. I didn't understand how quickly this was changing to more and more of the chief executive officers realize that the internet was going to be their key productivity tool this next decade and perhaps determine their survival. An example would be 2 years ago, if I were to call on the chief executive officer of a large financial institution, we'd have a very good conversation that asked me the questions that their CIO had asked them to ask for about the first 10 minutes. And for the next 40 minutes, they'd discuss about investing Cisco's $2 billion in cash, or if I didn't want to give them the money to invest, how about making a loan to me? In other words, the executives could not have cared less about this technology. Today, it's very common to meet with the whole executive management team to talk with the leaders of the financial institution about how this is going to be the productivity tool for the next decade for them, to talk about how they're going to use this tool as banking and insurance and stock brokerage combined, to present to the board of directors why this is important so they can get approval of their budget, and even when they have outings with their key customers, to meet with those customers to explain how the financial institution is going to use this technology in a way that will benefit them. And this is occurring at an increasingly faster pace, the business drivers. Let's use the U.S. as an example. During the prior generations of technology, mainframes and mini computers, if you look at total capital spending, the amount of money we're spending on plant and equipment and automobiles and things of that type, it was in single digits during the 70s. As PCs started to take off and other desktop client server devices, you began to see an increase. Today, networking is literally driving this increase. And you're talking about in the area of capital spending in the U.S., 43% of all capital spending going to high tech. One of the reasons our economy is so strong in the U.S. versus other economies around the world is how this high technology is being applied. And it doesn't take a mathematician very long to realize which way that trend is heading. But you're going to see other countries around the world follow similar trends, or they're going to be left behind as we move forward. When you look at the network, if I were to show you a network design of what you really go through in a major business, only an engineer would get excited about it and say it's cool. It is unbelievably complex in terms of how you share information. From a leader's point of view, I look at the network and I think about it as my home office, my international locations, my sales offices, my key suppliers, the ability of my employees and partners and suppliers to get access from their homes to this information they're entitled to, or as they move around the world. But as I begin to look at the complexity that this represents, it's kind of scary. Literally, what you want to see from customers, and what customers want to see us do as vendors, is to make this transparent to them, to match this complexity, to compare it, if you will, to the simplicity of the telephone. Just want it to work, want it to be easy to use. But what many people forget is the telephone was invented by Alexander Graham Bell in 1876. It took 120 years to get to where we are today. And it was largely one company or one company in each country that had responsibility for implementing this, servicing this, and making the devices work together from your home or business all the way throughout the network. We've got to move to the same point in networking to where the various devices, high and low tech, and the various applications have to be leveraged very tightly and seamlessly from a customer's perspective for the networking really to explode and for us to open up the opportunities that many of the companies represent in this room. To do that, it's going to require a generation of partnerships. It is our view that those companies who don't understand how to partner, how to align, how to strategically partner, acquire, and do joint ventures will get left behind. And when you begin to think about the partnerships that you're going to need, there'll be the network, but on one side of the network will be the devices that you need. Whether those are telephony devices, data devices, video, most likely a combination of those, PCs, telephones, etc., network computers. And you've got to interface those into the network in a seamless way from the customer's perspective. You've got to be able to get to the data wherever it is in the network, and you really don't care if it's in your own corporate internet, in the World Wide Web, in your supplier's network. And you've got to be able to get there very quickly, whether it's on mainframes, mini computers, PCs, servers, or whatever on that side. And you've got to be able to go over a number of various service providers, both carriers and ISPs, to be able to get there in the network. And at the same time, the customers or systems integrators will have to help to make these vendors' products work more effectively together and focus on content and applications. So you're going to see a generation of partnerships. For Cisco, as an example, we're beginning to look at which alignments do we want to have, and we'll align with a number of PC companies, cable modem companies, network computer companies, etc. But we're going to strategically align with the people we think have the highest probability of influencing these Internet appliances. We will do the same thing on the server side of the house. We will look at which service providers are really going to push this technology the fastest and are willing to align an end-to-end strategy that will really allow them the competitive advantage, lower cost of ownership, and the time to market. And we will also look at which systems integrators you want to align with as you move forward. Now, how many people in this room really 2 years ago thought a systems integrator, whose business used to be to combine various products and make them work together, would ever align with a key vendor? And this is the type of partnership that will help to mask the complexity in the industry as we move forward. And those vendors and companies in our industry who understand how to do this, how to partner, align, and strategically align, will be, in my opinion, the ones who lead the industry. Now, I'm going to spend the majority of this discussion talking about how it's going to change the way we work in ways that we hadn't even imagined. And what I talk about today, I believe 1 year from now at COMDEX, will seem kind of mundane. It's literally going to change every aspect of our lives and how we work. And I wish I could tell you there are 10 or 15 applications that will apply to every industry across the board. There aren't. The applications vary dramatically by which industry you're in and what applications have the biggest payback. There are probably two key exceptions to that, one being electronic commerce, that I think will fly across all industries and government, and the second being training. But let me talk specifically about the applications that might apply to a number of the industries from the people listening to this discussion today. Let's first talk about manufacturing. In manufacturing, the key application which networking is really going to enable is productivity and time to market. It used to be exciting to talk about how quickly a company could literally take the idea to bringing the product to market. And leading automotive companies around the world 20 years ago might do that in 8 years. Then people began to look at how to bring it down to 5 years and 3 years. And now companies in both Europe and the U.S. and Japan are thinking about how to do that in one. You can't do this without very tight network applications and network devices. You have to think about how do you tie together not only your entire company, so all your various engineering groups around the world, all your various manufacturing groups around the world work together, but how do you integrate through networks to your key suppliers, giving them the same access to information. And the companies who are able to do this with the best productivity and the best time to market will be those that grow and survive. And those who do not will go the other way. Similar example in the aircraft industry. How quickly a company can bring the product to market with the productivity increases we talked about before will determine the winners and losers in the aerospace industry. One of the large aerospace firms literally recently cut their plane into sections, got teams working around the world in each section, the nose section, the engines, the wings, the tails, the cabin, etc., tied in their suppliers as a key part of that team, designed and now built the plane completely with paperless from that end, beat their competitors to market for several years, and now is gaining market share at a very rapid rate. The point being, in manufacturing industry, productivity and time to market are the two areas that people are focusing on. And it will determine which companies move forward, if you will, and which companies go sideways or the reverse way as we move forward. The other day, one of Lou Gerstner made a comment that made the front page of the Wall Street Journal kind of surprised me. It basically said that it isn't just the discount stockbrokers that are going to use the Internet to purchase stock. It's going to apply to all of the investment industry. And while that was an interesting statement, and people immediately said, well, how are other organizations that have higher overhead really going to make money, it was just an application. But what it really said, in the security industry, the various leaders in the company have to understand what are the elements of the network that are going to be commoditized. What does each company have as a short-term or long-term competitive advantage, and what sustainable competitive advantages do they offer? And you're going to have to price your products and interface to your customers based upon where those are and how do you keep a step ahead of commoditization. And the network will be the primary vehicle that determines how quickly this is going to happen and how you really protect the advantages that you have. How you give access to your customers to the information they need, what you can charge for, what can you not. But for commonly asked information, you're going to go directly into the system. And you want your financial advisors to add value on top of that to your customers, particularly as the customers become more and more sophisticated. But of more importance, when you talk to the leaders of the insurance companies or the leaders of the banks, they aren't talking about how do they just make their own company more productive. They aren't talking about their traditional competitors. They're really talking about their future competitors. And when I talk to the CEOs of insurance companies, their future competitors, they don't mention other insurance companies interesting enough. They mention other financial institutions. And it's how people are going to use this network to provide the applications which enable their insurance agent, the financial agent or stockbroker, if you will, or the bank teller, not only to do their applications, but to do the applications through a combination of telephony and computer integration that allow you to service the customer with one-stop touch and educate the people so that when I talk to my insurance agent, he or she will not only say, John, is your 18-year-old driving any better than before, but to be able to talk about here's where your stocks are that you bought the other day based upon your buying pattern, here's something else you ought to be interested in, the mortgage rates are coming down, you ought to think about refinancing your home at this time, etc. And these will be network applications with a combination of human and artificial intelligence that really make it go and determine the winners and losers as you move forward. Let's talk about how you're going to go to the consumer. Let's talk about what companies used to consider as a key competitive advantage in their marketplace. You used to consider a key competitive advantage in your marketplace and how many locations you had, How large an inventory did you have in each of those locations? And when a consumer came in, your ability to direct them to the product that they wanted, or you could subtly suggest to them at the time. You look at the largest bookstores in our country. Perhaps as many as 1,000 outlets, tens of thousands of employees, billions of dollars in sales. But think of how this is going to change as the network comes about. Their key competitor, this largest company, is a small company called Amazon.com. And that Amazon.com has 2.5 million books that they can gain access to. And perhaps at a dramatically better price. And so all of a sudden the bookstore has to think about what I considered an advantage before in terms of the numbers of employees and the actual inventory level that I had has to begin to think about what value add do I have when somebody comes into my store they're not going to get over the network. And that's the transition they have to make over the next 3 to 5 years. And they will also sell their products over the network, and then they've got to watch how do they handle their channel distribution issues. In other words, understanding where they add a sustainable competitive advantage, a temporary competitive advantage that will be commoditized over time. A similar comparison could be drawn as you look forward to other industries. Toys, coming up on the holiday season. How many of you really love to go shopping in the crowd over the holiday season? Real quick show of hands. I mean, it's a thrill, isn't it? Fighting lines, finding a parking place, waiting in line to buy a toy that your children told you what they wanted to buy, only to find by the time you got there the toy isn't there, or you look at the toy and it's for the wrong age versus what your child is. Most of us know what toys we already want ahead of time. And most of us don't consider that a particularly enjoyable experience. And then you've got to bring them home, you've got to wrap them, take them down to the post office, send them off to your families around the rest of the country. Think how this is going to change in terms of your ability if all of a sudden you could order the toys online. And not only could you order them online through an easy process, you could use products being developed by a number of people in this room in terms of visual PCs and applications to visualize the product, see what age group it was for, get a feeling for whether it would fit or not in a way that you could really look at it in ways that were not acceptable, you know, even accessible even a couple years ago. You could stop by the toy store and pick it up on the way home, or you could have it shipped, already gift wrapped, wherever you want. Now, we could argue, is this going to happen in a period of 1 year or 5 years? And the answer is yes, somewhere within that range for a substantial amount of the way toys are bought. And the companies who don't understand how they've got to make those toy stores more attractive and convenient to us shoppers when we come in, and a pleasurable experience and a reason to go there. If all we're doing is picking up something we already know, we're going to probably acquire it over time in a different way than we ever thought of before. And it will apply to big ticket items as well. Car dealership. How many people in this room like to go buy a car? I mean, isn't it fun? You know what car you want, you know what color it is, you know what interior you want. And then you spend the next 4 hours having the salesperson convince you you really don't want that car, you want the car they have on the lot. Or you're haggling over price for a very long period of time. You're going to see the same movement, and you're already seeing companies like General Motors begin to go online with their systems, experimenting in states such as California. And as our technology, by the devices that are represented here in this room today, and the connection to the applications to the internet gets better, you'll be able to get almost all the information you used to get from the dealership over the network. And dealerships have to think about how they're going to have to change in the future. And again, you can argue it's going to happen in 3 years or 10 years, but it will evolve very rapidly this way. And their competitive advantage of various dealerships are going to change, perhaps more to service and support, and they've got to make that an enjoyable experience when you come to see the dealer, not something that probably half the people in this room actually regret having to do. The point that I'm making is that advantages that many of us considered in our business to be a key sustainable advantage just 5 years ago can be disappeared because of this technology as you move forward. Lots of companies talk in generalities. And while we're really proud about the success we've had at Cisco being the fastest, most profitable computer company in history, and we talk about that being due to our focus on the customer, setting almost impossible stretch goals, learning how to be number one and number two, either by doing it yourself, partnering, or acquiring. But often people don't understand what was perhaps the key reason that we broke away from the rest of our competitors. It was how we used our own technology and network web-enabled applications that really allowed us to break away. One of the top 5 to 6 factors that really allowed this to occur. We saved last year alone, off an expense base of $2 billion, $250 million in just 5 applications. The number was actually larger than that. That's a 12.5% increase in productivity last year alone. Similar increases in prior years, and I'm going to be even more aggressive in what we're going to see going forward. The number was larger than that, but if we were to share that larger number with customers, I'm not sure how many of them would have believed it. And secondly, if I went to my board of directors this year with a budget I wanted to get approved, and I told them how much I was saving, I was worried they wouldn't approve the budget. What I'm really saying is the opportunities are almost endless if you select the right applications. And this goes back to, again, 5 to 10 applications in each industry are very important. For us, interfacing the customer had the biggest payback. It's a very expensive interface the way we've traditionally done it. And the majority of the way we use our sales and support people out in the field or our partner sales and support people out in the field is just answering very basic questions about the technology, the functionality of the product, when is the delivery date going to take place, what bugs are in your next release, etc. And we realized if we could automate that, not only would our field force be more effective and our partner's field force be more effective, but our support centers, which were getting 3,000 calls a month and projected to go to 12,000 calls per month, would be more effective. But more importantly, I couldn't even staff the support centers if I wanted to. To take it from 3,000 calls a month to 12,000 calls a month in 1991 and 92 would have been all the headcount I had approved for the whole company. I wouldn't have added any engineers. I wouldn't have added any salespeople or SEs out in the field. In other words, even if it hadn't been a productivity increase, I couldn't have done it, and my customers would have suffered. So instead, we built a system and put it online to where it didn't go from 3,000 calls a month. It went from 3,000, not to 12,000, but to 700,000. And over two-thirds of those are now handled online by the system without ever touching a human being. And the customer satisfaction on a 5-point scale the last couple months has gone over 4.3, actually higher than talking to a human being. Saved 1,000 engineers. We took those 1,000 engineers, instead of putting them in support, we put them into R&D, we built our products faster, we pulled away from our competitors faster. And you begin to get an idea of the leverage. The next area that I want to talk about is network commerce. I think this is going to grow much faster than people realize. Early this year, even some of the best projections in the industry placed the value of network commerce at $5 billion this year. They've missed it by an unbelievable amount. They're placing it at 20 to, I've seen, as high as $300 billion by the year 2000, 2001. Both of those are going to be off a long way. Cisco alone does a current run rate of $3.2 billion in network commerce. In August of 1996, we started entering our orders over the network with a 60% increase in productivity for us and a 20% increase in productivity for our customers. It is growing by almost 10% per month in terms of the acceptance of this technology. Now, while this network commerce will be primarily business-to-business over the next couple years, with probably 85% plus being in the business-to-business area, it will spread to business-to-consumer. And business-to-consumer is what you read about an awful lot. But it's really business to business that will determine the leaders and where the majority of this will occur over the next several years. And it will either be Cisco or our competitors that by the year 2000 plus, 2001, that will be doing 15, 20, or 25 billion themselves over the network. And as automotive companies, the big three in the U.S. as an example, begin to interface to all their suppliers over a shared extranet, you're talking about a number that will make the numbers of 20 billion to 300 billion probably look very small. My own view is that high numbers are even off by a factor as much as fivefold in terms of how quickly this is going to occur as you move forward. One of the challenges we all face is how do you keep your culture as this environment changes? And if we aren't talking to each other, aren't we going to lose your culture? Well, the answer is you can't train and talk to your employees with the frequency that you want. You're going to have to use the internet to do that. If we have 11,000 employees, if we fly just 1,000 of them in to San Jose to train them, it costs several million dollars. And yet, training is one of the areas that will determine whether or not we can stay in the leadership role in our industry. By doing web broadcasts, you can all of a sudden do that same type of training for literally tens of thousands of dollars. Or how you communicate to your employees and how you do the training would be much easier for the leaders in terms of the culture that they want.
You're the first time willing to consider one company throughout most of that fabric.
It allows you to share your culture with your employees. Now, I've got to work with our engineers on the network. You know, there are some still quality of service issues. It tends to make some of the presenters, as you notice, look a little bit heavier and like they haven't got quite as much hair on that side. So I'll talk to the engineers when we get back. But the point that I'm making is it's here today and available today. You're beginning to think about virtual companies. Look what it's done for Cisco. These are our key competitors. This is their system business. And while there's probably four or five other things that we did that broke us out of the pack, if you look at when we really started to break away, it was in January of 92. That was the point in time when we stopped using IS as an expense center and started using IS as a competitive advantage. Hired an individual by the name of Pete Solvik. Pete built the team that was rated as the number one IS organization place to work in the nation this year across all companies. And we leveraged this technology, which allowed us to gain both productivity and competitive advantage, took the savings, put that back into engineering more products, put it back into supporting our customers better, and broke away at a faster and faster pace. So these just aren't concepts we're talking about. They're truly the way business is going to be done. And those companies that know how to employ these technologies and select the right applications at the right times will be the ones who win. And those who don't get left behind, regardless of where you are in this global economy. Now let's talk about how business is going to change. Today, I talked earlier, if you talk to any CEO group, they're telling, I'm going to empower the employees. I have to change the organization structure. But if you empower employees and they don't have access to the information that you did as a CEO to make decisions, they're going to make bad decisions. And yet, an employee's ability to get information in their own company. How many of you in this room think it's easy to get access to the information in your own company? You know what's there. Is it easy to get access to? I mean, let's not kid ourselves. The way the CEOs get access is I have a large staff of 5 to 10 people that go and get it for me. And yet, as you empower people, if you don't give them access to the information, they're going to make dumb decisions. And heaven forbid we ever gave the customers the ability to really get access to information quickly instead of requiring them to talk to one of our salespeople. Often when all they wanted to know was, what was the ship date of the product? To tell me about this new product in terms of the definition. You want to use those very expensive and very valuable resources of your own and of your partners in a way that it leverages values. You're really going to talk about how do you break down these barriers around this information as you empower your employees, as you give access to your customers to most of your information in your network, as you truly become a virtual company where you can't tell my manufacturing shop floor from my suppliers, from our sales or from our shippers. It will be one virtual company to the organization as you look forward, and to your partners as well. And the companies that learn how to do this, again, will be the ones who lead. The textbooks that were written about virtual companies of 10 years ago will happen during this next decade. And these will be the companies that lead as you go forward. It isn't just going to be large businesses that really change on this side. It will change what people consider to be an advantage. If you look in the U.S. as an example, it's projected that 25% of what they define as small businesses, over 640,000 businesses, will be connected to the Internet by the year 2000. And that 50% of the medium-sized businesses will be connected to the Internet by the year 2000. For those small or medium businesses that interface to larger companies that are supplier to other businesses, I'm telling you almost all of them will be connected by the year 2000, in my opinion. And by the year 2000 is when you're really going to see the interface to the consumer start to take off as each of us finally get the technology into our home, lose the fear of how to use it, and be able to use it for one application which brought it into the home and then for many other applications across the whole family as you move forward. I'd like to give you an example of how a very small company with a very limited number of employees and with one major inventory stocking point really competes with the largest players in their industry.
The wheel's a dynamic thing. It really doesn't change a whole lot. It's used virtually in every industry. We are in the wheel business. Networking is the fiber that holds together all the information about our customers, our suppliers, our products, the people that work here. We needed to find people that were committed to open standards and were committed to the customers and the investment the customer made in the equipment. And that's why we picked what we picked. Our company gets a lot of advantages out of using the Cisco equipment and having a wide area network. It allows us to go to new markets. As an example, I'm over in Tempe, Arizona. It's a brand new office for us. And we've only got really one person right now. And that one person has access to more inventory at a better price than any other person in the Tempe, Arizona market. Because he's attached to our network, it gives him all the horsepower of all my branches tied up together, so he's got more inventory at better pricing to deliver to those customers the best solutions possible. let's say I've got not a lot of calls coming into my branch in my Union City office, and I've got a lot of calls down here in Garden Grove. Well, it's really easy for me to shift work. Since everybody at all the branches are online and have the information and the information to help the customer, we can use the network to shift the load of work from one location to another to make sure that my company is the most productive it can be. When I wanted to buy the Cisco routers, I went to the Cisco website. And on their website, they had so much information. They even showed me pictures of what the back of the equipment was going to look like, so I knew what kind of cabling and what I needed here to make that equipment work. I was able to pick all the equipment myself, spec it myself, and know exactly what I was getting before I ever called somebody. That's exciting to us. We've been able to go to other branch locations and be a virtual company. We've got people working out of their house and have access to their email and the product availability without having to drive to work. I've got people working late at night without having to have somebody here to look up information for them. I've got the ability to send information back and forth to my vendors instead of having to have it faxed or written. It's so much faster and so much easier. A wheel is a wheel. They're all round. What we use the network for and what we put on our casters are what makes them all stand apart. This is my strategy. We're going to use networking. Follow me. I dare you.
Now, I'd like to tell you that all of our customers are that enthusiastic. But what you really saw was a small company with a couple handfuls of employees that learned how to load balance their resources across the country and appear to a very large company in each location. Their competitors who have large amount of resources in each location, large amount of inventory, they can't load balance that in an effective way are going to be at a tremendous price disadvantage and competitive advantage going forward. They have to think, what advantage do I have that the smaller company does not have? And that's where networking is really going to change the applications by company and by example across all small and medium-sized businesses as we move forward. I want to switch to the second and third element. The way networking changed in the way we live and play in ways that you never imagined. My chief technical officer a couple years ago, where at his home, switches, routers, every room connected. I said, only you geeks are going to do that, Ed. Ed's a good friend of mine, so I can get away with saying that. And he said, John, you're going to have it sooner than you think. I hate it when he's right. My home now is wired to every room. Our whole family used the network, the internet, if you will. It was brought into the home for business reasons. For me to get applications, access to the numbers each evening, access to critical accounts, key information, etc. But once it was there, we used it in ways we never imagined. My son, who's an 18-year-old, also coaches soccer for 8 and 9-year-olds. He communicates with the soccer league over the internet. He communicates to the parents of these players over the internet. He uses it to do his schoolwork. My daughter, when she applied to college, used it to look up the information about each college. SAT scores, teacher-student ratio, something called a boy-girl ratio, which took me a little while to understand why that was important. But she uses it now to communicate to all of her friends all over the country as they went to different colleges from that side. My wife has learned how to use it in terms of interfacing to an interior decorator, unfortunately. Very expensive option. You want to figure out some way to screen certain information from coming from your home, and I've got to figure out how to do that more effectively. I'm convinced the technology will be there. My father, who was computer illiterate 2 years ago, 73 years old, didn't even ever use a PC in his life, can all of a sudden surf the internet more effectively than I can. I've got a unique relationship with him. He's my best friend. We communicate all the time. But now he'll often tell me in the phone calls, he'll tell me what my competitors are doing, comments that are made about my company, and suggestions about how I ought to run the company better with information I haven't even seen. And the point that I'm making, it will change every aspect of our lives across all of our generations. At the same time, more and more of the parents around the world are working, either as single parents or as dual-working parents. 60% of the children in the U.S. under 6 are in daycare centers. And yet 60% of the parents rate those daycare centers as either poor or mediocre. Think of how internet working can even change the competitive landscape in a daycare center. And of equal importance to our employees, how our employees think about the daycare center. Think if you were at work and your daycare center had the capability for you to go over the internet and look to see how your child is doing. This is what one daycare center did outside of New York City. They installed cameras around the daycare center so that you could see all the locations. They're updated on the internet, on the website, every 30 seconds. The number of students there was, the number of young people there was slightly over 200. This became so popular a way of looking and allowing the parents the peace of mind of looking at their children at any point in the day whenever they had a question, and the grandparents to be able to look at it, that they doubled their business, had to open a second daycare center. And the point that I'm making is this is going to change the way business is done, the way we play and learn in ways that now might seem revolutionary. At next year's COMDEX, we'll consider, oh, of course, we all know you do that. It will also allow us to be more effective at work, because the thing we all worry about most is our children and how are they doing. I wish I could figure out a way to use a similar technology to track my 18 and 20-year-old in terms of what they're doing. Let's talk about how we learn. How many people in this room know how to use a slide rule? Is that a characteristic you put on your resume when you look for another job? No, you don't. I was great with a slide rule. I was really confident, electrical engineer, I carried on my hip, etc. But the minute another technology came along, I was obsolete. The way we're training our children in K-12 and in universities around the world is like my generation was trained. We have to rapidly change. We have to use the network as the way to train them. We have to teach them how to use the network to do their research papers, how to do in a couple hours what might have taken me a week to research. Most of the universities in the U.S. and most of the universities around the world over the next couple of years will tie the internet to the individual dorm rooms. They'll submit papers over the internet. They'll be able to get updates and key information. Their library will no longer be the library on campus. It will be the World Wide Web from that side of the house. And much of the education for those of us who are going to change jobs, who are graduating from college today, 6 to 10 times during our career, the continuing education will be done by distance learning, where universities will probably have as many people in their MBA classes, if you will, in distance learning and virtual classrooms than they will in the actual MBA school themselves. And we're talking in the U.S. about wiring our schools to where 64% of the schools, K-12, now have an internet connection. And we're beginning to talk about how do we teach our young people how to use this technology. Now, we've got some hurdles in that area. We've got to get the wiring to each classroom. We've got to teach the teachers how to use the technology, and more importantly, how to teach it from that side as we move forward. But those are hurdles we're going to get over. We've also got to get people there to support it, because your real cost of the product aren't the products themselves. It's actually the support of that product as we move forward. But when you begin to look at where the jobs are today, you're realizing that our education system is not preparing students for where the jobs are. In high tech alone, there are 190,000 job openings. 190,000. And the average high-tech wage versus the rest of the private sector is 73% higher in the U.S. than the other private sector jobs are, and yet we can't fill the spots. And over 70% of the companies represented in this room will tell you perhaps the most critical factor that is limiting their growth is the ability to get quality employees. And you might think this is only a high-tech phenomenon. That's not true. The exact same thing is true of manufacturing operations worldwide. If you use the example of American manufacturing, the chairman of the National Association of Manufacturers the other day made a very blunt statement. He basically said that finding qualified employees was the number one challenge facing American manufacturing. Not high tech, American manufacturing across the board. The same will be true in other countries, whether they're in Europe or Japan. And he also followed up with the comment, the lessons learned is very simple. Either we've got to learn how to train our employees and prepare our employees better, or the high technology and the productivity and the production will go to other economies around the world. It is a matter of survival. In short, we've got to do a better job around the world preparing our students for where the jobs are. Our university system in this country is one of the best in the world, but our K-12 is broken. It's broken. When the 11th and 12th grade writing scores continue to decrease, the SAT scores have decreased since I graduated 30 years ago. The average 4th and 8th grader in this country, 40% of the 4th and 8th graders can't even achieve the basic level of skills in mathematics and testing from that side. 29% of the young people who go to college have to do remedial classes in universities. Now that's within our country as far as not preparing students for the future. But if you haven't grasped anything else, think about how this internet generation is going to change in terms of the worldwide global economy where the jobs will move to wherever the workforce is. Now, we can argue, is that going to happen in 5 years or 25 years? But the answer is yes. It's not going to take 100 or 200 years like the Industrial Revolution. And as you begin to look about the global economy, companies are going to move the employees because they have to either those states where the best education and the employees are, or to those countries. And the United States will not be competitive, even though we might have the best productivity tools here, because over time, all the other companies around the world who are going to grow and survive will have them, some of the countries. When we spend $300 billion a year, by the way, in education. Third out of the top 41 industrial countries in terms of the percentage of GNP spent on education. And yet our students rank 17th in science and 27th in math. We're going to empower our young people or our workers with employees with tools, and they aren't going to have the basic skills to know what questions to ask or how to interpret the results. We have to change this. Business has to lead the way. There are no special interest groups that can put pressure on business on this. Business has to say the way we're training our young people is unacceptable. It's unacceptable for our future employees, but it's also the number one issue of our existing employees, that their children are not getting good education. And we have to do three things. We have to push to get testing. We have to be able to compare, not only from state to state, but country to country. Secondly, we've got to introduce competition and choice. And the choice has to occur to all of our students, regardless of income level, not just for those who can afford it. And third, you've got to tie results to reward as you move forward. And businesses have to think about that in this room. Otherwise, the businesses will move to other countries around the world from that end, where the educated workforce is. I think it's a challenge facing much of the world as we move forward. And groups such as Technology Network, I think, can, if we're successful, play a key role in this area. But I'd encourage you to play an active role yourself. Now, let me talk about one thing that Cisco is doing that is kind of unique. When we talk about wiring the classrooms, it isn't the cost of the connection, and it isn't the cost of wiring the building that your real expenses are. Your real expenses over time is how do you maintain the system. And how do you train students in the K-12 that aren't going to go to college for the future? I'd like to share what we're doing in a number of classrooms around the United States.
Everywhere we look, technology is playing an increasingly important role. So that it's really critical that these same powerful resources that are available in the world of medicine, for example, or business, be as powerful and available in our classrooms as well.
Back in the 50s and 60s, STEM classes provided some basic skills for an industrial economy. As we move into the information age, schools are being asked to provide more relevant skills and education. Cisco is taking a leading role in bringing cutting-edge technology to public education. These students are in a program called Cisco Networking Academy. This Cisco-sponsored program teaches computer network engineering skills to high school and college students.
I think the Academy was an outgrowth of our long relationship with education, starting when the company was founded. We spun out of Stanford University. So we've always had an appreciation of the importance of education and how education unlocks the abilities of individuals.
Cisco proposed that we pilot it here at Thurgood Marshall. Their broad goals for the program, I believe, were to allow our students to get marketable skills, and also to allow them to support the school's network itself. It's educating students for possible careers in computer science, electrical engineering, internetworking fields.
It goes from like binary numbers to IP addresses, subnet masking, the history of networking, how to run the cable, what tools to use, the kinds of cable.
I look at my situation when I left high school. I didn't see myself as a marketable person that could go out into the workplace. Right now, the internet and internet technology is in such a growth period that I think it's important for our students here in the United States to have those skills to help fill those jobs. Last year, during the pilot semester, we worked on San Jose Convention Center. When they heard about the Cisco Networking Academy, the idea was, well, students are looking for projects. Why not this one?
It was actually really interesting. I mean, people looked at us and they were like, hey, these guys know what they're doing. And I was like, yeah, that's right.
It's something we're very proud of, and we do it because it's the right thing to do. But candidly, it also prepares students to take jobs in our customers that can handle our technology and other technologies. We already have that in 57 schools in 11 states. We'll expand it to all 50 states during this next calendar year to probably in excess of what I believe will be over 500 schools. We will expand it into Europe and into Asia and into several key countries in this next fall. And we've already invested, as I said before, over $20 million of our own equipment and money to really begin to make this work. So I think companies have to work together in groups to focus on key issues, as well as individually to address this phenomena as we move forward. I hope what you've got a feel for today is literally the Internet is going to change the way we work, live, play, and learn in ways that people are just going to begin to dream about. And you might think, John, what you're saying is network, network, network. That's not necessarily the case. I really want you to think about it in terms of the right applications at the right time. This might be a California thing, but it's like riding a wave. If you get out in front of the wave too far or there too early, like video on demand or home banking, as several companies were over the last several years, the wave crashes upon you and it's a problem and your senior leadership doesn't appreciate the way you spent the money. You get there too late, the wave passes you by. So the key is to understand where you are in terms of the right application at the right time versus your industry, and when you're taking risks and when you're trying to just catch up. And the selection process here is very key. It is truly an internet revolution. Perhaps a term that wouldn't even have been used 12 months ago, one that is used more and more frequently at shows like this, but it will have the same effect around the world on the internet generation. The generation of companies that will be leaders in this new global economy, companies that will truly be virtual, where many of the advantages of size no longer apply, and how you use your technology will really determine the winners and losers. A generation of people who really learn how to use this technology, and of countries. And it will be just like the Industrial Revolution in some ways that will determine which countries have the highest standard of living and the best workforce that is empowered and rewarded for achieving that, and which countries get left behind. In short, the Internet will change everything. We started off by saying that the Industrial Revolution brought together machines and people in factories. The Internet Revolution brings together people and information in virtual companies around the world. And our role as a company, if we execute properly, is to enable this Internet generation. Thank you very, very much for joining us today. Have a good day.